is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
Friday. You got to get down on Friday, in the words of famous singer and philosopher Rebecca Black. What's going on, everybody? We got Michael Bumpus in for Danny O'Neill, and I am Paul Gallant. Bump, how you doing, buddy? Oh, can no one hear each other? Well, this is just awkward. I could play elevator music with my mouth right now. But listen, technical difficulties happen. This is one of the realities of COVID-19. From time to time, we're going to be figuring things out on the fly. And I'm totally... Here's what I'm going to do until we can figure out how to communicate with one another, and assuming that anyone can actually hear me right now, which actually I have no idea. I'm just going to keep on going with it. So, oh, we can't hear Michael Bumpus now. Bump, hello, hi, hey. Speak words. Can I? Shoot, maybe I can't hear anything. What's going on with me? Oh, man. Well, until we figure out what's going on that front, I'm not really 100% sure what to do. What do we do? Do we do a dance? Because right now I'm taking a look at my speakers. I believe that the speakers are playing audio into my ear lobes.
Hey, Paul, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, now I can hear everything. Goodness gracious me, oh my. I apologize, everybody, for that absolute disaster of an open. Michael Bumpus, hello. Hi. Oh, how are you? Can you speak now?
Okay. We're going to work on that. In the meantime, we're slowly joining. It's kind of like an award show where people just slowly roll up the red carpet. Yeah, I'm definitely in like the Jennifer Lawrence party that shows up after taking tequila shots. And then Bump is going to be like the very famous one.
Well, that's the perfect way to start a Friday with a little tequila sunrise or something like that. All right. So in the meantime, and at some point we will get Michael Bumpus aboard. I have been really just amused by the Quentin Dunbar saga. And I know that maybe I shouldn't be because there was an alleged robbery that took place, but no one got hurt along the way. So let's all sit back and just appreciate the absolute madness that has been spawned by said robbery. I thought Michael Bumpus was about to talk.
We were so close. Well, let's revisit Michael Grieco, who joined John Clayton earlier this week, who was just a walking soundbite when it came to explaining everything. And this is probably one of the best cuts
he had.
They
can do what they want, but you know, I've got the only smoking gun in the case, which is actually I've got five of them. And however they decide to handle it, that's on them. But we're feeling pretty confident, and I know the attorney for the other gentleman is also in possession of similar affidavits.
I mean, flex a little more, Michael Grieco. Not one smoking gun, but five smoking guns. You don't have enough hands for that. Even if you were to use your feet, you would still need like another limb or an appendage to somehow hold number five. Look, whatever happened there, it is going to be hard for the NFL to prosecute Quentin Dunbar if you have four people that are alleging that Quentin Dunbar was someone who was present at this robbery, who took place at this robbery, and then later you have five people who are saying that he wasn't even there at all. But in the last 24 hours, here are some of the things that we have seen. Number one, Michael Grieco, who again is just a fascinating character and who once told reporters it is absolutely untrue, look into my soul, when asked about his involvement in a fundraising scandal that he'd later plead no contest to, tweeted out a photo of what looks to be a Twitter direct message. It's a picture of two guys with smileys over their faces looking at a big wad of cash. One of them looks like he's taking a picture of it, so that guy can probably get evidence? I'm not 100% sure. The message that was attached to said photo: you missed some good money yesterday, bro. Dolphin players, Dre Baker, even beat him. We beat him out of 10K on the game, and then it was shooting dice about another 60,000 out there. Now, what's funny about this direct message, and we're hoping to get Michael Bumpus in here soon, Patrick Patel, who is one of DeAndre Baker's two attorneys, has threatened a libel and lawsuit slander against Dunbar's lawyer for deciding to tweet this random Twitter direct message, saying, quote, "The text is complete bull bleep." Read the text. You can say anybody is in that person. Wasn't it everybody's bull bleep at the beginning that my client Baker lost $70,000? Now go read the text. The text is saying Baker won $10,000. So what are we doing? I'm actually not sure that it says that. He goes further saying DeAndre has no knowledge of anybody in those texts, who sent it, and to who. Let the guy come forward. I cannot wait to get Grieco on the stand and cross-examine him on how he got that text and who he got the text from. So now it has turned from Quentin Dunbar potentially trying, and his lawyer, trying to get Quentin Dunbar to face no possible punishments by the law and hopefully by the NFL vicariously, to Quentin Dunbar's lawyer and DeAndre Baker's lawyer squabbing with one another in a courtroom, which to me, Michael Bumpus, is hilarious.
Yeah, it is hilarious. Am I back on? Yeah.
We got him. We got him.
On the party bus. I'm on the party bus. Let's go.
Welcome in.
It's a back and forth. You know what I mean? And what's weird about this whole situation, too, is that Baker and Dunbar are still friends. Like, they said they're still cool throughout this whole process. And the lawyers are just pointing fingers and doing this dance or whatnot. So every day this story gets more and more interesting. And who's telling the truth? You know, it's all about evidence at this point. It's all about who's going to come out and speak out again, too. Who has more support? Does Dunbar have more support, or does Baker have more support? And I think as this thing draws out, we'll see where the where people are loyal, or who they're loyal to.
Bump, I've never been a lawyer. I don't think you've ever been a lawyer. I've never even done a mock trial or anything like this. But say you were a judge. You've got the gavel, you've got maybe you've got like a 1700 style wig on or something, and all of a sudden one of the lawyers decides to present to the court this evidence in support of his client. DeAndre Baker's lawyer, Patrick Patel, has claimed that DeAndre Baker could not have been the man who robbed this game of dice and of cards because he was in another room playing Madden.
It does get funnier every single time.
I mean, was he playing Madden? Who was he playing with? You know, was he playing against someone online? I mean, was there someone sitting next to him? There's a lot of ways you can play Madden. So now here's the next step. If that's the evidence that you're going to present, okay, you got to find out who he was playing against. I think that's the key. That's the smoking gun right there, right? Who was he playing against? Can you find this person online, or was he playing against someone sitting right next to him?
See, that's the thing. He might have been playing Bump against somebody who's right next to him. And I got to say, the way that Patel presented this is really fascinating. And you know what? It's ultimately, I feel like everything's going to end up falling on DeAndre Baker, because this is some flimsy evidence, in my honest opinion. He said this, Patel. "Far from an individual who's going somewhere with an alleged intent to rob somebody, an armed robbery, to go there and hook up his Madden game, play the game for over an hour, and then leave it there and go home." So this is like a really nerdy thing to do for anyone, and borderline antisocial. Say you have an Xbox console. You brought your Xbox console to a house. I get that it's an Airbnb. It might not be there. Sorry, that's a little bit weird and antisocial. If everyone's playing cards or if everyone's playing dice, I mean, you're going to bring your whole Xbox over? A little clunky, a little bit weird, especially if you're going to play the game for over an hour and then just go home. But you leave the Xbox there as well, which is also bizarre. Why would you leave it? You brought your Xbox to this game and all of a sudden you just leave it there? Up as someone who used to bring his Xbox between his two homes, my dad's house in Boston, my mom's house in St. Pete, Florida, you never, ever leave the Xbox, ever.
No, you don't leave the Xbox. I understand bringing it, right? When I travel with my kids, we go to Airbnbs, we do our thing. Like, Xbox is life for my son. He's 10 years old. He wants to bring the Xbox everywhere he goes. So I understand bringing it, leaving it there. So if he did leave it there, just with my point of view, I'm not a judge, I'm not a lawyer. It tells me that maybe he left in a hurry. You know what I mean? He was like, hey, I gotta get the heck out of here. Whether that be I'm in trouble, let's get out of here, or things aren't going right, let's get the heck out of here. I can buy another Xbox.
Right. And look, that is true. I mean, if you are someone who plays in the NFL, you could have multiple Xboxes. What a luxury that is. But I'm with you. It looks very, very suspicious for DeAndre Baker here. And I'm not going to lie. Like, every single bit of evidence that comes out here, especially since no one got hurt, it's funny. Let's sit back and enjoy it. And hopefully, and I know this is perhaps a little bit selfish, but hopefully Quentin Dunbar was not involved, because the Seahawks are going to need him this coming season if they want that defense to take a step forward. That is Michael Bumpus in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. It is now time for What to Watch For.
What to Watch For, every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Josh Gordon had 7 catches for 139 yards in 5 games with the Seahawks last year, including what was up for catch of the year by the Seahawks, that beautiful diving fingertip grab that he had against the Carolina Panthers. And then after that game, he was suspended indefinitely for substance abuse, the 6th such incident on his resume, and PED abuse after Seattle's win. He will reportedly apply for reinstatement. Bob, what do you think about the idea of Josh Gordon coming back to the Seahawks?
As a football player, I love it. And what was unfortunate about that situation is that we felt like he was on the verge of breaking out. He made that fingertip catch. We're getting all excited. We're hyped up about this receiving core. And then, unfortunately, he gets in trouble. He has a real problem. It's a disease. You know, he struggles with substance abuse. And I think that you can work your way around that. You know, everyone has someone in their family who struggles with something, whether it be alcohol, substance abuse. It's part of life, unfortunately. But the thing that intrigues me most about Josh Gordon, he had 1,600 yards in 2003. He missed 2 games. Like, the messed up part about this is that we could have missed out on one of the greatest receivers of all time because of his problem. Now, if there is an organization that I feel can help him through this, that is going to stand by him as long as he's being a good person off the field, I think it's the Seahawks. Give the guy another chance. Again, Aldon Smith is playing in the NFL. He's going to play in the NFL again. Why not a Josh Gordon?
You know, it's a great point. And you are so right, because Josh Gordon, there have been no incidents off the field that you look at and you say, man, he hurt somebody else. Aldon Smith actually does have one of those, and it's fairly recently. It's 2018, an incident of domestic violence. So if we're talking about what's fair, if Aldon Smith's back in the NFL, it's definitely would be fair for Josh Gordon to be reinstated to the league. But I don't think you can trust Josh Gordon with a roster spot. And I get it's a disease. I really do feel for him. It's something that goes back way to his childhood. But we're talking about 6 incidents already. It's very likely it's going to happen again. I do hope that the Seahawks have some way to help him get the help he needs, because I do think that NFL teams have the resources to help some of these players get through these troubling times. But I don't know that you can give him a roster spot when you only have a set amount of them, because it seems like this is just something that happens every single year with them.
What to watch for.
We saw The Last Dance.
Yeah.
It wrapped up this past weekend. We're going on to the next one, Bob. We're going on to the next one. We'll talk more about Josh Gordon later on in the show. ESPN ordered a Tom Brady docuseries that'll air in 2021. It's going to be produced by Tom Brady's production team, 199 Productions, which he launched back in March. You excited for this?
No. No, I'm not excited about it. I mean, come on, Tom Brady. Grady, you're the GOAT, greatest of all time. I get it. But, dude, you're still playing football. Why are you coming up with a documentary right now? Like, chill, man. Retire, fade off into the sunset, and then, boom, remind people who you are. You know what he should do? He should do what Jordan did. Wait until Patrick Mahomes starts balling out again and people start questioning who's the GOAT. And then you bring out your documentary. But I get it. I understand what he's doing. He wants to remind people. But the fact that he's still playing, he's still acting, kind of rubs me the wrong way. I'm not here for it. I feel like you feel differently about this, though, Paul Gallant.
Well, listen, I love Tom Brady, but here's how I feel about it. It's going to have a hard time being as entertaining as that Michael Jordan documentary, because Michael Jordan was definitively the best that ever played in the NBA and was extremely competitive and downright mean to some of his competitors. Tom Brady on the field, definitely different than Tom Brady off the field. And I think the Tom Brady off the field is not going to make for a very entertaining documentary. No matter how much I appreciate what he has done in the league, I do wonder, too, if this is going to air in 2021, and with the way that you laid it out, he's still playing, does this mean that this is his last season and that this is going to be documented, this final year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that's it? Who knows? But I think that's definitely something to consider.
What to watch for.
We saw yesterday, this is from Danny O'Neill's friend, Chris Sims. The Cowboys offered Dak Prescott a 5-year, $175 million deal that would make him the highest paid quarterback ever. So that's $35 million a year annually. Dak supposedly wants north of $45 million, and that likely means that he wants a shorter contract, but probably for the same amount of total money. This is difficult. I understand that every single quarterback bump is supposed to make more when they get that big extension than the last quarterback who got a big extension. That's just sort of the way that that quarterback contracts work. But I'm still not quite convinced on Dak. And it's not to say that I think he's a bad quarterback. I think he is probably one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. But I really wonder if he is capable of bringing this Cowboys team further than he has. I mean, they have a lot of weapons around him right now. They bring in CeeDee Lamb. No excuse this season, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's no excuse this season. I think he's capable of winning a lot of ball games. I think he needs to have the right cast around him, and I don't blame him for trying to go out and get the most money that he can. But at some point, it's like, okay, let's be realistic, right? $45 million that last year. So what that means, you would get 10 million more than a Russell Wilson, a guy who's won a Super Bowl, who's been to the Super Bowl, who wins a lot of ball games. So it's part of the business. You know, I get him trying to maximize. When guys throw these numbers out there, sometimes I think that maybe they don't believe they're going to get this, but it's just a bargaining tool. This is where you're going to start, and let's see if we can meet in the middle somewhere. So I don't blame him for trying to go out and get his money, but I'm also like, you're not $10 million more better than a Russell Wilson. So let's wait and see how this season pans out, and then you can renegotiate your contract.
That is Michael Bumpus. I am Paul Gallant. It's Danny and Gallant with Danny on Vacation. It's now time for John Clayton's Morning Drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, we saw that Josh Gordon is going to apply for reinstatement. There have been a couple of people texting in on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line asking about the legality of weed per the new collective bargaining agreement. I don't know what Gordon tested positive with his most recent, his sixth incident where he violated the NFL's substance abuse policy. But from what I have read, it does sound like the NFL is going to hold him to the old collective bargaining agreement. I don't know what that means for his reinstatement. Do you expect the league to put him back and allow him to play again?
I do, yeah. Because as long as he tests positive and doesn't have any incidents, then there's no reason not to allow him to come back. I mean, he's done this now how many times? And so just like he did last year, as long as he's clean now, he should be back. And it sounds as though he probably is going to be clean. I like the idea, the fact that he's actually, I don't know if he lives in Seattle, he just flew into Seattle, but the fact that as soon as Alden Smith got his suspension lifted, then you had the tweet coming out from Josh that, okay, I'm here in Seattle, I'm ready to go. So I would anticipate that he's going to be cleared. The question is going to be when, because, you know, I know that, for example, even the case of Alden Smith and Randy Gregory, their representatives were upset because things were moving so slow. And understandably, because the league is working on so many things as far as the schedule, trying to figure all the things out as far as the daily operations and all that. And so that offers, I think, some ability for him to get back. You know, it still might be a month or 2 months, but I anticipate him being active. Hello?
Hey, we're still here, John.
Oh, okay.
We're having some issues this morning.
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Michael Bumpus, you got something, buddy.
John, yes. So ESPN has ordered a Tom Brady docuseries that airs in 2021. I'm on the side to where I think that this is a little premature. How do you feel about it, and how interesting do you think this docuseries is going to be?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting just because, again, you can see that Tom wants this out, and you know, I still anticipate him playing two years. You know, he signed a two-year, $50 million deal and got both years guaranteed, and he wants to play as long as he possibly can. I don't see any, because again, the one thing is, you know, that these documentary series can be well produced, and I think you'll have some of the best people working on it. And you know, he's the greatest quarterback of all time, so maybe you're right in the standpoint it'd probably be better after his career. But you know, this one can take care of the transition coming from New England going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I'm all for it.
Bump brought on an interesting point just a moment ago, and we were talking about it in What to Watch For. That, I mean, it's really weird that he's doing this as his career is still in progress. It won't air until 2021. Do you think that this is maybe a tell that this coming season is his last season?
No, absolutely not. No, I think what it tells you is that it's another reason that you're breaking away from Bill Belichick. Because do you think Bill Belichick would allow this to happen?
No.
Absolutely not. You can't get inside anything in the Patriots organization, including inside the brain of Tom Brady's. So I think this is, you know, one of those things that, that gives him another celebratory type of thing, that's saying, okay, here's another reason why I broke from the Patriots and Bill Belichick, a chance to show who I am and what he is. Because remember, one of the things that he has is going to be getting into after football is that, you know, TB12 and all the different businesses that he's going to be involved in. This is just another thing they can do to give more insight and help him promote his businesses.
John, what did you make about the latest details that we've heard about Dak Prescott and his potential contract? Supposedly, the Cowboys offered him 5 years and $175 million, which would make him the highest-paid quarterback annually, getting about $35 million a year. Dak Prescott, though, wants about $45 million a year. I'm guessing that means that he wants a shorter deal. Obviously, they still have until July 15th to give him that extension. Is this actually news, or is this just more negotiating through the media by both parties?
No, it's more stupidity as far as reporting is what it is, because, again, it's all inaccurate. It's like, okay. First off, we get the idea that the five-year offer from the Cowboys. Remember, this is Chris Sims putting this out, and Chris Sims has been wrong on so many things in the last month. And so, he says it's going to be 5 years, $175 million. Well, Prescott's people said it was wrong, and the Cowboys said it was wrong. So good one on that one, Chris. My understanding is there is kind of like the situation when Russell Wilson was there getting his second contract with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was at 22, and the Seahawks were below 22. And so my guess would be that what you're looking at, the Cowboys are a little bit less than 35, and they want a five-year deal. Okay, Prescott wants a four-year deal. That's understandable. But if he's thinking $45 million, his negotiating tactic may be actually worse than Jadeveon Clowney. Because he's not getting $45 million. He's not a $45 million quarterback. I mean, right now, you can't even say that Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, who's better than Prescott, is going to get, you know, 40. I mean, 40 is probably going to be the number. If he's asking for 45, he needs to kind of take a pill or something. He's wrong.
John, NFL owners will meet next week to continue to talk about having a booth umpire or sky judge. How do you feel about that? I think the game needs a sky judge. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm all for it. I know the coaches are for it. The general managers are for it. I think that's the one that they need to do, but I think it's still probably not going to pass because, you know, the competition committee is not totally in for it. And but it's so needed because, again, you've watched it in the XFL. You've watched it in the AAF. I mean, you can see how smooth that can do. Again, it's not going to clear up all the problems, but it's an easy way to clear up some of the problems. I think they should vote for it. I'm worried that they won't.
John, what you just said is so baffling to me. And you're right. I mean, we heard a couple of weeks ago the competition committee was like, nope, we don't want this. And I thought to myself, wait, why? I mean, there's legitimately no reason to not put this in. And I was actually surprised that it was even being discussed again by NFL owners. What brought it back to the table?
I was hoping it's logic because, I mean, there was a conversation back before that they were just going to have it for the preseason as a preseason experiment to test it out. And, of course, it's like, why would you do that? It's like, why not put it in for the regular season? I mean, certainly it makes, I guess, you know, in this year when you have the pandemic and you don't have the ability to assemble people, you know, how are you going to, can you actually execute this? Because, you know, you're not even going to have the ability at this stage to maybe even have the combine for the officials to try to get together in Dallas to prepare for the season. We don't even know if they can be able to assemble to do that. But I just think they need the Sky Jugs because, again, it makes an easier way to fix problems.
Professor, we appreciate you joining us every single morning for the Morning Drive at 7:15. We'll hear you on the John Clayton Show at 10 o'clock. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, buddy.
Okay, thank you.
He is Michael Bumpus, and for Danny O'Neill and I am Paul Gallant. All right, I think we smooth things out, huh? We're sailing Christopher Cross style into the weekend, got all the technical difficulties figured out. Everything eventually comes to an end. It's been over a year since something very dear to my nerdy heart came to a close, and it still hurts me. It also has me wondering about the future of the Seahawks. I will explain what I'm talking about next. Don't go anywhere right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Hear that music? Did you know that about, I don't know, a year ago, Game of Thrones came to one of the most disappointing ends that you're ever going to see? And Bump, it had me thinking, how is this regime of the Seattle Seahawks going to ultimately end? You got Pete Carroll, you got Russell Wilson, you got John Schneider. You got a pretty good thing going right now. I would say if you were to compare it to where Game of Thrones was, it was like about season 4, where everything was good. The season was pretty good, and you're feeling good about the future, but you don't know what's going to happen. And obviously, for those who have watched the show, it was about as disappointing a final season as you're ever going to see. So I'm curious, what's the shelf life for this current group? It's a very young football team, so you would think that they would get better this coming season, but you've also got all of those big-time problems that we talked about last year, Pump, whether it's the pass rush that couldn't get to the quarterback, it's a offensive line that I think at times was suspect in terms of its protection. Part of that's also on Russell Wilson holding the football a really long period of time. How do you feel about the trajectory of this team over the next couple of seasons? And do you feel like everyone's going to be alive the whole way to make that more Game of Thrones comparisons?
There are always casualties along the way. So we can almost guarantee that some guys are going to be there. But I feel like they're moving in the right direction. And as long as they have a franchise quarterback in Russell Wilson, they have a chance. Now, every team has to adjust. No team is perfect, right? The Super Bowl champions, they were talking about the run game. They're talking about the defense. You know, the Niners made it to the Super Bowl. They were talking about the quarterback play. Every team has its issues. It's all about how they adjust and really change to address those issues. And the issues that the Seahawks have at this point are the defensive line, really just the defense, right? It's all about the defense at this point. Russell Wilson has done enough to prove that he can carry this offense. He needs a little help on the defense. If I had to put years on this team, how much longer do they have? I would say there's a 3 to 4 year window right now because Russell will be 34, 35 in a few years. And I feel like that's where he'll start to need more help. If they don't get him help on the defensive side and still ask Russell Wilson to do the things that he's done the past few years, then I think they're going to fade off into the sunset. But the older he gets, the more help he's going to need on the other side of the ball.
I'm with you there. I think it's about 3 to 4 years left. And the real question is, can the Seahawks potentially stick the landing with a couple more Super Bowl appearances like we saw in the middle of the past decade? Or are we going to see things end sort of the way that Game of Thrones did? Ugly. Maybe there's a season 6 left, and season 6 was awesome, and it ended in, I thought, about as good a way as the season possibly could, and maybe that means a Super Bowl for the Seahawks. But the big, I think, question right now is, those who look at the Seahawks and think they should continue to operate the way that they've always operated, because look at the last decade of success. I mean, like, it's only second to New England, and you could argue that maybe there's another team that's been on the same wavelength as them, but really it's like maybe two or three other teams, and it's a very hard argument to make that they'll be over what Seattle's done this past decade. But there's also the mindset of, as you just said, Russell Wilson's in his prime. the defense, you know, no matter how we feel about some of the players on that defense, like, you're asking a whole lot out of these young defensive linemen. You're hoping that the linebacker core that was on the field as much as it was last season can maybe be more impactful than they were last season. They did their job in terms of, I think, run support in terms of Bobby Wagner, but wasn't a very good run defense either this past season. That's the big problem. Should they have gotten more guys that can help them out now, specifically on that defense, or should they continue to operate the way they always have? What if you were to fall into one of those categories, one of those camps, Bump, which one do you think you are in?
Yeah, I think you obviously need a mix. And if you get older guys, they're going to cost a bit more, right? So there's a game you got to play. You have to plan for the future but live for today at the same time. So you need to go get a guy like Bruce Irvin. You need to go get a guy like Dunbar. But you also need to draft a guy like Brooks because Bobby's on his way out in 3 or 4 years, however long it takes. I hope Bobby plays forever, but the reality is he's going to be gone someday. You need a guy like Ugo Almighty to get these reps. So you got to find the right mix. And I think Pete Carroll's going to learn from last year. He's going to let these young guys play early. Last year, Ugo Almighty started week one, kind of faded away, and then was asked to come in later in the season and ball out against the Green Bay Packers. And he just didn't have the reps. He wasn't comfortable out there. So I don't think you can be in one camp or the other. If you're trying to win this year, and this is it, this is the Seahawks' last dance, so to speak, right? Then you go and get the old guys out there and say, look, you beat the Lakers in 2003-04 when they went and got Gary Payton, Karl Malone. All these old guys were like, okay, this is our last year. Let's go out and get it. Now, if you're trying to sustain greatness and you're trying to win for years to come, you got to mix that thing up, man.
What a political answer. A regular little finger right here.
You got to prepare. That's real. For now.
That's what
and
it
you
is.
Need to look ahead to the future. I've loved you since I was a boy, the Seahawks.
It's one of those things where I am going to put myself firmly in one camp, Bump. I am going to pledge allegiance to House. Continue to do what you've been doing. And I know it's frustrating. Believe me. I'm not happy that Jadeveon Clowney is still on the open market. Now, they are playing things right. Like, they might not have to pay him a whole lot of money, but there's still a chance he leaves, ultimately. And since we've been hearing that they're potentially interested in signing a running back, we've heard Devontae Freeman. They offered Devontae Freeman a $4 million contract, and he wants more. And yeah. I see Carlos Hyde out there. I would love the Seahawks to bring in Carlos Hyde, but from conversations that I had, a guy who just ran for 1,070 yards yesterday, I was talking to some of my people in Houston, and they said that Houston offered him $5 million a year, and he said no. And I mean, he had played for like I think a $2.8 million contract this past season when he was signed by Kansas City and I think traded to Houston before the start of the year. You're gonna have to pay money if you want to bring in one of those veteran running backs, and I think you do need a veteran running back for this coming season. But if you do that, okay, all of a sudden you might have unplugged your chance to bring back Clowney. So I'm frustrated with that side of it, but this is the thing that I think we should always keep coming back to, and this is not me trying to be some sort of Seahawk spin jobber. I'm not, believe me. This was the fifth youngest team in the NFL going into last year. And you have to predict development just as much as you have to predict that eventually you are going to lose players through free agency. And ultimately, I think if you want to see the Seahawks win one Super Bowl, okay, you can push your whole hand in and you could have gone this offseason and brought in a Jadeveon Clowney and maybe signed somebody else. But if you want to give Russell Wilson and company in this 3 to 4 year window, which I agree with, multiple chances at a Super Bowl, I think you got to continue to stay the course.
Yeah. I mean, it's been working thus far. You know, the reason why it works, so it's because of Russell Wilson, right? You put a lot on this guy's shoulders. He's asked to be a magician sometimes and make something out of nothing. But you have to start developing. It's all about development. A lot of these franchises forget that. You know, and I think that's kind of what helped Pete Carroll. He has that college mentality. You know, I'm going to get him as a freshman. By his junior year, he'll be ready to go. And I think that's kind of how they see these draft picks. Every now and then, you're going to hit. You're going to get a DK Metcalf who's going to come out his first year and do some great things. I think with this last draft class, if they can get one guy to hit, one guy, to maybe a Brooks, Taylor, whoever it is, a Dallas, one guy to hit, I think that's going to help their development. But you have to get these young guys reps. You have to give these old guys rest. When they tap that helmet, bring in the young guy for two or three plays. So it's finding the balance. And that goes with just preparation, knowing what each guy brings to the table, and then communication, knowing how your veterans feel. You know, do they need a playoff? What's practice like this week? When you have an older team or a team with older guys like the Seahawks, I'm okay with load management is what the NBA does.
Load management. All right.
Cut down practice. Hey, let Bobby chill on a Wednesday. He don't need to be out there. You know, let him sit.
You're just one of those soft millennials asking for load management. It's football, Bob. Football. If you have to pick one guy to develop from last year to this year, because I think if we make predictions on rookies right now, I think honestly we're legitimately just throwing bleep at the wall and hoping that things stick. Who's the guy that's going to make the biggest jump from last year to this year?
I think it's going to be Ugo Amadi. And I think it's going to be him because he showed he can make plays on special teams. And I think that's where you get guys reps. That's where you get them used to the speed of the game. Ugo Amadi was the first guy down on the kickoff team, on the punt team. He's making plays. So he's getting comfortable. He's getting confident. He knows now that he can make plays in this league. Now, later on in the season, they put him in some compromising positions, and he got beat. Life of a DB. You're going to get beat. But you talk about this defense, and everyone's talking about, oh, why did they play base defense so much? It was out of necessity, in my opinion. They felt like they didn't have a guy who can play that nickel. Now, if they can find a guy in a Ugo Amadi, or to see what happens with Dunbar, if Dunbar plays that corner spot, you can move Trey over there and try to get some. It's about that nickel spot in that defensive line. If there's anybody who's going to make this jump, I feel like it's Ugo because he has some experience. He's going to come in a bit more confident, and I think the kid can make some plays.
All right, Ugo Amadi, the guy to keep an eye on this season. Get him on the field, please. Get him on the field in some way, shape, or form. Heck, even as a returner, possibly, because that's a guy that in college he was pretty good as a returner. That's going to be intriguing competition, by the way. He is Michael Bumpus in for Danny O'Neill, and I am Paul Gallant. It has been a week of my heroes joining the show on Danny and Gallant. Shout out to Jess, the greatest producer alive, getting Lawyer Malloy on Wednesday, and Drew Bledsoe yesterday. Check out those podcasts if you want to hear
people.
Me geek out like an absolute nerd. It was fantastic, Jess. Thank you so much.
Awesome. I loved it.
Unfortunately, one of my other heroes, I've got to call him out next. And the worst part about this, it's because of what he did to one of my least favorite players on one of my least favorite teams. I feel dirty. You'll hear why next, Danny and Gallant.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Before we get into some basketball tales, a tale of dirty play, I did want to mention that it appears that Jerry Sloan, the former coach of the Utah Jazz, has passed away. If you were watching the Last Dance documentary, you saw a lot of Jerry Sloan's Jazz in the last two finals against Michael Jordan and the Bulls. I mean, that team was the model of consistency for such a long time. And imagine just those three guys, John Stockton, Karl Malone, and Jerry Sloan all together. I don't know how people in Seattle feel particularly about the Utah Jazz. I'm guessing, given where I was in Houston, that they disliked Utah Jazz and the Utah Jazz fans, just given how hot the Western Conference was back in the 1990s. But rest in peace, Jerry Sloan, who passed away, it seems, this morning. All right, Bump, I wanted to shift into this. And it's very hard for me to admit because I like this guy. I like him a lot. Paul Pierce, he's one of my favorite players. He's a guy from your part of the country, your neck of the woods. He's from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
We have been wondering, okay, why it was that he refused to put LeBron James in the top five NBA players of all time. I figured, okay, it's because he's petty. He's got a rivalry with LeBron. He didn't like the joining the Miami Heat thing. Well, it seems like there is bad blood between Paul Pierce and LeBron James, and it's entirely Paul Pierce's fault. And there is no defending Paul Pierce on this. Kendrick Perkins had hinted that there was a time where Paul Pierce spit at the Cleveland Cavaliers bench during a preseason game. And Paul Pierce actually confirmed this on television. Here's Paul Pierce.
I mean, it was just, you know, the crazy thing about it was a preseason game. And that didn't mean anything. I don't know. Me and LeBron going back and forth. The bench is yelling at something. And I look over to the bench and I'm like, that's why y'all on the bench or something. And I spit at them. And I'm not sure if I hit somebody or not, but I spit in that direction. And then it just kind of tempers flared up. The next thing you know, we was in the hallway. It was about to go down.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of like the
basis
of everything.
What do you think about that, Bob?
First off, Paul Pierce. He's from Los Angeles, Inglewood to be exact. Inglewood, California.
Is this an Inglewood thing?
Spit on anybody. That's the most disrespectful. I mean, Inglewood, you know, them cats don't play, you know? It's Inglewood. You know, my wife is from Inglewood. Her family's from Inglewood. Like, they don't play. It is what it is. And for you to spit on, that's like the most disrespectful thing you could do. Is spit at another man.
Really?
I'd rather have you try to throw a punch at me or open hand try to slap me, but spitting on me? That's a different level of disrespect. I got, you know, when I was 14, I was playing a game and some dude spit at me. He didn't hit me. The spit didn't get me. But the first thing I did was ball up my fist and punch him in the face. Spit.
That's Whoa!
Disrespect. You don't do that. Disrespectful. Don't spit at anybody, Paul Pierce. Inglewood, California should be ashamed of you right now.
Wow. And look, I didn't know that this was the worst thing that you could do, because we have seen some pretty disrespectful moments in sports over the last couple of years, whether it was Kevin Garnett talking about Carmelo Anthony's wife. A lot of them involved Kevin Garnett, by the way. Akeem Tlaib stealing Michael Crabtree's chain. By the way, Michael Crabtree seems to be the subject of a lot of players' ire. I remember one time, actually, Paul Pierce was the subject, and this was in the middle of a game. Like, Ron Artest pulled his pants down. In the middle of the game. Now, you didn't see everything, but he tried to stop him from moving, so he just pulled down Paul Pierce's pants. But spitting, is this the absolute worst thing anyone can do? Like, even over trash talk?
Yeah. Spitting and maybe trying to touch my woman, you know?
Okay.
Those two things.
Wow.
It just doesn't fly. No.
No, okay. So basically... if Clubber Lang had spit at Rocky, it would have been slightly more disrespectful than in Rocky III. When Clubber Lang, he's there and he sees Rocky at a statue raising presentation, which, by the way, classic Philadelphia, that was the only statue and is the only statue they have of a sports figure there. That's pretty sad, bro. That's the only statue you have. But Clubber Lang, he goes up and he says, "Hey, woman, how about you come with me and spend a night with a real man?" Like, so if he had spit there, would that have been more disrespectful than making a pass at Adriana, who, by the way, is the worst?
Yeah, I mean, when a dude makes a pass at your woman, like, verbally, I mean, it is what it is. Guys are going to shoot their shots, whether you're there or not. I mean, it happens. Now, spitting is just something different. You know what I mean? It's
okay.
It's just nasty, man. It's nasty. You don't.
It
share
is gross.
Spit, you only share spit with people you love.
by the way, we've got some texts in. And 710-710, the Vizzy's Hard Seltzer text line. What's the most disrespectful thing that you remember on a playing field, on a court? Spitting definitely has to be up there. Someone suggested something that took place in a locker room. And I suppose this is outside of the locker room. It would be very weird if it took place in the locker room. But Tony Parker had an affair with, I believe, Brent Barry's wife. And they were teammates at the time. That one is a very bad one. That's about as bad of a teammate as you could possibly get. But on the field, on the court, what's the most disrespectful thing that you remember? Spitting, especially during a preseason game, Bump. I mean,
yeah.
Wow. You got to have some real salty feelings. And it does seem like a lot of NBA players, when they heard about all this hype about LeBron James, they were just like, you know what? Screw this guy. But I mean, Pierce took it to a ridiculous extreme.
Yeah, that lets me know he was jealous. You know, he saw the kid. He was talented, didn't want to believe in it, wanted to humble him, I guess. Because you got to think, like, LeBron James was on front of magazines. Like, he was already being called King James. So I could get where guys get jealous. All right, I understand that. But how do you handle your jealousy? You don't spit at a guy. You try to destroy him on the court. And on another note, Paul Pierce getting mad at LeBron James for joining forces. I get it. But Paul Pierce, you joined forces with Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen. So, like, what? If you didn't join it with those guys, you wouldn't have got your championships anyway. So right now, Paul Pierce sounds like a salty individual. He needs to check himself at this point.
I think there is a slight difference, though. I think there's a slight difference in how they got together. Because Chris Bosh and LeBron James voluntarily went there, where the Celtics did acquire those players via trade. It's slightly different, but I understand. It is the same idea. Pierce couldn't get it done on his own, and he needed Kevin Garnett, and he needed Ray Allen to get over the hump. It's, I think, the part that the team actually made it happen via trades, as opposed to these players just saying, hey, let's go to Miami, is maybe why it rubs some people the wrong way in the case of Miami. But you're right. It is a little bit hypocritical by Paul Pierce. And the spinning thing, that's the funny thing. He leaves LeBron James out of his top five because of something that he started. If it was LeBron James spinning at him, okay, I'd get it. He spit at LeBron James. There's no defense for this. Bad luck by Paul Pierce, who is one of my guys, but I there's no defense for him in that situation.
Man, in these times, too, that's going to be considered assault.
Assault, brother?
You can't. that's an illegal move now. I mean, it used to be disrespect. This is, they're going to mask you up.
Get Michael Grieco on the case. I don't know what the statute of limitations is for a spit, but, I mean, LeBron James, lawyer up, brah. All right. Coming up next, Michael Bumpus in for Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. Can an athlete play if there's no one, in the words of Commodus, to entertain? And I'm not sure it's a Jess caliber surprise, but we got something fun for Michael Bumpus the rest of the show. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle.